Hello and welcome to the quarterly Kier Marbach podcast. I'm Zach Greiner, and joining us today is Kier Marbach's Chief Investment Officer, Mark Foster. Welcome back, Mark.
Thanks, Zach. Good to be with you.
Our agenda for this episode will be broken into two parts. First, we'll lead off with Mark talking us through recent market happenings. Then we'll switch gears a little and touch on some action items that we need to be thinking about before year-end. It's amazing that we're already talking about year-end, but as we round into the fourth quarter, it's never too early to start. All right, so to start us off, Mark, it's been a pretty newsworthy last couple of months if you've been watching or reading any national news outlets. Keywords like inflation, tapering, corrections, interest rates, and federal budgets have all been sensational headlines. Can you help bring some clarity to what we've been reading and hearing?
Well, the market, as measured by the S&P 500, rose slightly in the third quarter. July was up 3%, August was up 2%, but September fell almost 5%. Growth was a little bit stronger than value, but not a significant difference, so in total, very little overall movement. Interest rates, on the other hand, as measured by the 10-year Treasury, started the quarter at 1.46%, then dropped down to 1.13% in July, and rallied back to 1.5% at quarter end. So sometimes it's okay to have a little bit quieter quarter. The real action in the quarter was in Washington, D.C. Congress was and is facing several deadlines. First, the continuing resolution was passed to keep the federal government open until December 3rd. This doesn't address the debt ceiling. That's still ongoing. But this really isn't that significant. No one really expects the government to default on its debt. I call it political theater. This will get addressed, and even if it misses the deadline, it's hardly as catastrophic as politicians lead us to believe. In addition, we have the infrastructure bill still hanging around waiting for House approval, and the reconciliation bill still being discussed. Who knows how these will play out? We'll just have to wait and see. None of these issues really creates much significant risk for the market. It's all just short-term noise. We've seen all this before. Now, that's not to say that debt levels aren't important. In the long run, piling on this much debt is never a good thing. Republicans shouldn't do it, Democrats shouldn't do it. But as long as rates stay relatively low, the debt service costs don't create a major near-term risk.
Just to jump in real quick, highlighting another concern we hear a lot from our clients is inflation ramping up. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so inflation in August was measured at 5.3%. This is higher than anything we've seen in a while, and candidly, it looks to be going higher. Housing is a large component, roughly 30%, and the big move in home prices hasn't been reflected in the numbers yet. In addition, we're dealing with supply chain bottlenecks and labor shortages that are putting upward pressure on inflation rates. But in my opinion, the biggest contributor to this recent jump in inflation is the Federal Reserve and their accommodating monetary policy. So in scary times like 2008, people want to hold more cash. So when the Fed provides cash to the system, it's a good thing and it doesn't cause any imbalances. When people aren't afraid, they don't need to hold cash. Yet the Fed has been growing money supply at a 12% rate over the past 6 to 9 months. Compare that to the historical growth rates of 6 to 7%. Much of that liquidity gets spent on goods and services, and when products are less available, boom, you get inflation. While it has been described as transitory, I think it will last longer than a few quarters. The biggest beneficiary of this will be commodities. We've seen oil prices move higher and many other commodities, steel, copper, corn, all are well above where they traded a year ago. That's likely to continue for a while, and that message is one we hear over and over again from the companies we own. In fact, one of the services we use quantified that 45% of all companies made comments about inflation in their last earnings conference call. This is much higher than anything we've seen in a long time.
Sounds like something to keep an eye on. As you mentioned earlier, overall for the third quarter, the market was relatively flat. However, in September, we did see almost a 5% correction. Is that something we should be worried about?
Yeah, so corrections are a normal part of investing. 5% declines historically have happened 2 or 3 times per year. 10% declines have been every 1.5 years. It's just we haven't seen these for a while. The consistency of the market's upside since the pandemic low has been incredible, with the S&P 500 up for 7 consecutive months and without a 5% correction for close to a year. Now, it's easy to say that declines are normal and should be expected, but when you're in the midst of one, it starts to feel more painful and anxiety-producing. Plus, any modest dip in the market gets portrayed in the financial press as the next coming collapse. As you and Maggie discussed in our last podcast, investors need to find a level of portfolio risk that works for them and stay the course. So, in summary, we don't think there's big risk in the market, and as long as earnings keep growing, so should the equity markets. Large market declines and recessions are almost always preceded by serious Fed tightening. It would take extraordinary measures by the Fed to raise rates and drain liquidity to the point that it would push the economy into recession. We aren't anywhere close to that today, so I think we're a long way off from a very negative scenario. That doesn't mean we won't have some volatility. It's one of the few things you can say with certainty. The markets will fluctuate.
Great update, Mark. Thanks for sharing. Like I was mentioning earlier, it can be easy to get caught up in the headlines we read. Having a breakdown like this really helps us understand, on a less sensationalized level, the happenings going on in the markets. I do have to highlight your last point there. One of the biggest keys to long-term investment success is understanding your risk tolerance on market fluctuations, both up and down, so that we can build a portfolio that does not have investors up all night worrying about those volatile days. All right, so we're going to switch gears a little bit now. As we round into the last quarter of the year, it's already time to start thinking about year-end planning. You know, personally, I've been smelling pumpkin spice since August. With the supply chain constraints Mark mentioned earlier, I've already started eyeing frozen turkeys in the grocery store, and I think the last straw was seeing Christmas decorations out at Sam's Club already for sale. It's now time to start thinking about year-end. By no means are we going to attempt to be a CPA podcast, but we do want to highlight a couple items that individuals can do to maintain a healthy financial household. I promise I will try not to dive into the weeds too much, but if there's something you hear that you need more clarity or detail on, please don't hesitate to reach out to the Kier Marbach team. All right, let's dive in. For today, we will only focus on items that need to be done before year-end 12/31, and we will have action items for all age levels. The first thing we will focus on is for retirees over the age of 72. We're talking about required minimum distributions. The key here is just to make sure you've taken your full required minimum distribution before the 12/31 year-end to avoid any penalties. What is a required minimum distribution? Most of you probably already know, but it's a required distribution out of your IRA in order for the federal government to have you report ordinary income and in turn produce some tax revenue. You do have the option of donating your required minimum distribution to a 501c3 and avoid reporting that ordinary income. Okay, next item is 529 educational savings plans. Do keep in mind that contributions for most states, including Indiana, need to happen before 12/31. And also remember, you can make contributions for not only your child, but grandchild, niece, nephew, and family friends. So there's a lot of opportunity to contribute to 529s for young students. The other thing we'll touch about really quickly on the 529 contributions is, since the Secure Act updates, you can have some other uses for your 529 accounts, paying back small portions of a student loan, or also tuition for K-12 and private schools. Just something to keep in mind. I also want to highlight, for those Indiana residences, you get a $1,000 or 20% tax credit for up to $5,000 in 529 contributions. So what does that mean? It means if you put $5,000 into a minor's 529 account, the state of Indiana will send you a $1,000 refundable tax credit. Each incentive for every state varies, but that's a pretty strong one for those living in Indiana. All right, let's talk to those individuals that are still working and covered under corporate benefit plans. We are entering open enrollment season for most plans. Open enrollment's a time that will allow employees the opportunity to make changes and update their company benefits. Health insurance coverage, retirement contributions, life insurance coverages, and disability are the most common. Truth be told, we could spend a whole show talking about this, but we're only going to highlight one major part, and that's your contribution limits. We just want to make sure everybody is matching the full company match for any company-sponsored plan. For example, if your company matches 3% of contributions to your 401k or similar account, make sure you are matching that match. That sounds kind of redundant, but the idea is if it's a 3% match by your company and you're contributing 3%, that's a total of 6% contributions being made, of which half are free. Just trust us. Do it and you'll thank us later. To highlight maximum contributions, if you're covered under a 401k or a 403b, you can contribute up to $19,500 into those accounts. Anybody 50 or over can contribute an additional $6,500. If you're covered under a simple IRA plan, maximum contributions are $13,500 with $3,000 catch-up. So I know I threw a lot of numbers out there, but keep in mind you have a pretty high limit to contribute to your company-sponsored plans. Take advantage of the match. To piggyback on kind of the open enrollment thought, it's also Medicare open enrollment season for those 65 and older. The reason why we highlight this is there's been a lot of changes and updates to Medicare these past few years with Medigap versus Medicare Advantage. We like to highlight that if your costs are not what you expected or your doctors and coverages are not in your network, now is the time to make changes. Okay, two more strategies, real quick. One is going to be tax loss harvesting. The unique advantage of having an individual stock holding strategy like Keir Marbach has is the ability for us to take individual holdings that have an unrealized loss and sell them to reduce your capital gains for your taxable year. This year has been a pretty strong year growth-wise, so there might not be a lot to harvest tax loss-wise, but still something to manage your tax marginal tax bracket. The other action item that needs to happen before end of year are any Roth conversions. May be appropriate for some people that have reduced salaries to COVID, but just remember, you got to have your Roth conversions done before the end of the year as well. So that's our little checklist. I hope everybody heard something on there that they can maybe take advantage of. If you have any questions, please reach out to the Keir Marbach team. We'll help bring any clarity. And again, thanks for taking the time to listen to our quarterly podcast. We hope we're able to give you some clarity on the markets and some good pointers for year-end strategies. Stay well, and we look forward to catching back up next year. Thanks.